You are listening to Radio Albion.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and it is Wednesday, December 9th, 2020. I thank you for a lot of the positive feedback I got in the Biden talk last week. If you haven't heard it, please check it out. It's nothing more than really a summary of the evidence for the fraud. As most of you know, I don't vote and I have no connection with political parties. But the regime, and by that I mean the ruling class, isn't even trying to defend this. You know, there's this COVID vaccine coming out where there's been almost zero debate over it. It's something that was forced through using all kinds of emergency measures to bypass the FDA. And there is not a clue as to its long-term or even its short-term effects. And this for a virus with a 99.5% survival rate. This is an absolute mockery. If Biden is installed as president, the U.S. will be a one-party regime, because now every election will be rigged. Millions of illegals will be getting citizenship, and there'll be open violence against anyone who disagrees. The big tech giants, of course, will be crushing all opposition if Biden actually makes believe he has some sort of mandate. Thereby, the Trump idea is publicly repudiated, and they're so isolated and completely out of touch that they believe that that's the case. I mean, they know that there's been nothing but fraud, but it's for a good cause. The attempt to remove any kind of Christmas gathering, the attacks on Kyle Rittenhouse, the absolute media control of events and their interpretation, the make-believe racial stories, legalizing all kinds of drugs everywhere. Some of you may have heard that violent crime in Minnesota or in the Twin Cities has gone up over 500% in the last few months. And you have Black Lives Matter and Antifa strategically placed in major cities to smash all dissent as a massive transference of wealth, what's left of the wealth of the middle classes, to the oligarchs is complete. I said back in April that this was a wealth transfer. The lockdowns were a wealth transfer. Massive subsidies going to corporate America. And that they're going to need events, usually of a racial nature, to keep rebellious whites in line. A month later, you had George Floyd. Within a Biden presidency, to the extent possible, the regime is going to be emboldened. Some of you may have heard that the NASDAQ listing of major corporations, and the public trading of stock has demanded, and in fact they are instituting, diversity requirements on all corporate boardrooms. And if they don't comply, they'll be delisted. That's the future that awaits us. This is the result of there being no functional movement. The lack of trust is now exponentially rising given these lockdowns, which is one of the important sociological consequences of it. Within the secular realm, it seems almost that all is lost, but we don't just live in a secular realm. I've used the example of the Soviet Union many times. The elites in this country believed that the Soviet Union was growing and healthy and stable as late as 1990. And yet without a shot being fired, the entire edifice came collapsing. One of the things we have to do is support, financially and every other way, those who are in the trenches full time, myself included. Some of you have been very generous supporting me, and I thank you for it. And more than ever, it's a necessity. But we have to redouble our efforts to support one another in person, wherever we can, with small gatherings, whenever this is feasible, regardless of what the regime says that we can do. They've already shown that protests from Antifa or BLM, now worth billions of dollars, are excluded from any kind of restriction given the COVID hoax. Anyway, so we live in an age that we knew was coming. I don't think any of us predicted the virus, but we knew this was coming. And hopefully we have a network in place where we can support one another, not just financially, but also personally and emotionally. And supporting young families is absolutely essential here. That being said, I want to switch from the topic of current events, which I normally don't do, and talk about something that I normally do. I want to talk about ethnic nationalism as the fundamental reality of political science. And as I commonly do, I use some of the work of Alexander Dugin in this regard. He has a book out called Ethnos in Society, which Arctos, I believe, has in an English edition. I've read it in Russian. As is typical of Dugin, it's extremely lengthy and very repetitive, but it is certainly worthwhile. Ethnic nationalism is, you know, one of the things that's in the title of this program, and an ideology, very broad set of principles, really, that I've argued for a very long time, is how we can reconstitute any kind of serious politics. Politics is based on the Greek word koinonia, with the idea of communion, subornost. And Dugin calls the notion of ethnicity something based entirely on that, almost undifferentiated. It's the tribal background without which no civilization could have ever come into existence. Society, by its very structure, implies a unity of language and moral norms in a broad sense. There can be no discussion, there could be no cooperation without trust, and trust comes from similarities in outlook. It's a very ancient idea, one almost apolitical. It's kind of the background understanding of humanity, that nothing, the most basic communication couldn't exist without the ethnic tie, the linguistic tie that holds us together. So Dugin uses the word ethnos in its most pure form as a simple society, the domination of the collective identity, but weak in its differentiation, horizontal or vertical differentiation. It is community in its pure sense. But of course, even these tribal groups are different one from another depending on their background and geographic location. So we deal with ethnic groups in the plural, and the concept here is that these basic communities become more complex over time. Now, this is overly simple, but one thing that Dugin warns us to avoid is to not use concepts of advanced or primitive in a moral sense. It's in essence, it's an unscientific concept. Because we talk about something being advanced or not advanced, normally we're referring to technological development, which is one criterion out of many. There is no evidence that a developed society is more happy than the society of those who are considered very primitive. What one country or one society may have in technology, another may have in moral unity. Now, the distinction between simple and complex, that's a different story, but that's not a positive or a negative evaluation. So, Dugin begins his understanding of ethnicity by saying that the more simple a society, the more ethnic it is. The more complex it becomes, the less the ethnic element appears, at least on the surface. Complexity makes the ethnic foundation more and more difficult to find. The simplest society, or the tribal society, has no other content, as he says, other than the ethnic. It is community as such. It's almost a form of community. So the key to understanding historical development is how the ethnic tribe can become increasingly complex without losing its unity. So ethnicity is the fundamental, basic social phenomenon. It's an idea that can be found in theory, philosophy, but also something that you can see and experience every day. This is not often the case with isolated and abstract ideas like the individual or the class, but the ethnicity is based on every common movement, every common word uttered. But ethnicity is something very different from the nation as such. Ethnicity is based on a language, a belief in a common origin, and a common culture. Rituals and traditions. All three have to exist for any society to function. If it's not the case, it falls apart into its atomic elements, and those who are the most cohesive and have the most money are able to dominate the rest. If a society exists at all, it has to have an ethnic cast to one extent or another. Aristotle, as many of you know, developed the idea of the family and then the extended family as a foundation of social life. Marxists, on the other hand, see it as a purely economic phenomenon, a labor and the use of tools. And as that becomes more and more complex, the state is necessary to protect the differentiation in classes. So they all assume that human society is based on some external factor, but they don't explain society as such. Society, regardless of any of this, has to have an ethnic foundation, or the word society doesn't make any sense. This is a concrete life experience. Before you could talk about anything, whether it be origins, or function, or purpose, there has to be a group of people united by language, belief, and a common tradition. But ethnic groups are not identical to extended family. They're not identical to evolved animals or products of economic activity. And an ethnos cannot exist if it's an extended family due to, obviously, inbreeding issues. Ethnicity is an easily verifiable phenomenon. If two people are speaking one to another, ethnicity is assumed because they're speaking a single language, and their gestures and even the most minute movements are based on some basic social agreement and social trust. Immanuel Kant's moral theory is based on the idea that the imperatives can be identified in the act of making them universal. A very simple example is the idea of trust. If trust doesn't exist, then no human communication whatsoever is possible. Because there's absolutely no way to tell if someone's telling the truth or someone's deceiving you. Not only does society fall apart, there can't be any society at all. And it's the idea of universality. You remove something like that from social life, and it's not merely that society can't function, but there simply is no society. Immanuel Kant's error is not explaining what that society is in the first place, where something like trust comes into existence for a purpose. Its origin is ethnic. Now, you notice that something like that is not strictly empirical. It's a rational construction. We don't have to have an experiment where if we remove truth-telling or trust from the society, we'll watch society malfunction. In this case, it doesn't make any sense. Rather, the notion of what a society is conceptually falls apart and can't exist in the first place if deception is found everywhere. And the whole ethnic nationalist idea, and again, Dugin defines nation as very different from ethnos, we'll talk about that in a second, is absolutely fundamental. When you say the word society, you're referring to an ethnic connection. Because even with a very simple use of Kant's deontology, the whole moral idea is the very structure of society rather than, you know, something that works or something that's convenient. Society as such, even humanity, falls apart without these moral absolutes. These moral absolutes are part of the structure of society as such. Now, ethnicity is the fundamental reality of social life. In fact, it is the fundament itself. But it's too simple. The next step is a people. People is a technical term with a capital P. a people becomes historical. It exists in time and place. A people is subjectively aware of itself as a political entity. It begins to reflect. And of course, this is the very foundation of phenomenology. Now, the concept of nation is something altogether different. And this is where it gets tricky. A lot of people misunderstand Dugin and the Eurasianist idea, because he seems to reject the idea of the nation, except that he defines it as nation-state. So the ethnos is the absolute fundamental entity, and from it it has two derivatives, the people, or the subjectively understood ethnic group functioning in history, and then on the other hand, the nation. A people, again, it's a technical term, like, you know, Russian people, a specific group, it begins to create a religious background, a civilization, even government. Now, the state is something altogether different. And when Dugin uses the word nation, he means nation-state. One of the biggest problems in understanding nationalism philosophically is that people simply import whatever they want into these terms. People have just some basic prejudicial feeling that nationalism is evil because it has something to do with hatred or something like that. They've just heard it somewhere. And they pat themselves on the back because they oppose it. These are technical terms with functional, actual meanings. But because the state of political discussion is so bad and so low and so media controlled that people use these terms simply by applying labels. And these labels are nothing more than emotional attacks or the opposite. Now, the nation state does not necessarily derive from the ethnos because it's a specifically modern development. You've heard people, you know, who read a freshman textbook in world history or something that'll tell you that nationalism is a product of the French Revolution. If someone says something like this, they're going to be very hard to reason with. To be that ignorant on a topic, and it's usually said with this great degree of confidence, means that you're going to have to talk very slowly when dealing with these people. The state as a modern phenomenon derives from modernity, not the French Revolution specifically, but the modern state, sometimes called the nation state, is not necessarily connected with the ethnic group. One of my first published articles, peer-reviewed articles actually, was on how irrational the phrase nation-state is. Now, when you talk about these things, you have to define the terms in context. I refer to nation the same way that Dugin refers to ethnicity. The state is purely modern. The ethnic group, of course, is primordial. It is the nature of society. Therefore, nation-state is irrational. The most that the state can do, and here I'm referring to the state as bureaucratic entities, elements of coercive power, is pretend to derive from the nation. This is a purely modern idea. There are legitimate states, but not in the modern variety. So a nation manifests itself in the modern age, replaces the notion of a people. It pretends to derive from the ethnic foundation, but it in fact doesn't. the state ends up having a will of its own, and it becomes simply a bodyguard of the ruling class. And Dugin uses the word nation-state. He's referring to what we know as civic nationalism. And it's a shame that we actually use the term nation to refer to both ethnic and civic, since they oppose one another in almost every level. The nation-state is a modern idea where everyone, regardless of their background, living in a certain territory, within the jurisdiction of this entity, is a citizen. And it's based on citizenship, and on those grounds, equal. That is not a unity of anything. The ignorance of talking about nationalism in any usable sense of the term coming from the French Revolution is to try to join two opposites. The French Revolutionary idea negated all the content of ethnicity. It rejected all traditional relationships and understandings. It replaced it with a rationalistic, mechanistic understanding of rights whose origin was never fully understood. It was atheistic, and the very opposite of what the French ethnicity, how it understood itself. The nation-state is dominated by the urban elements of the population. And Dugin makes the argument that the Greek term demos, where we get democracy from, doesn't refer to just anyone, but it refers to the urban bourgeoisie. It simply meant an abstract population, but inhabitants of urban areas, a group of people without any clear ethnic or even class identity. And this is why Aristotle viewed democracy as a negative model. This wasn't the legitimate polity in Aristotle's sense. This is based on the rule of the urban commercial class. The polity is qualitative, organic. The majority of people, in the sense of expressing their best, who they are as a people, not mathematically counting votes. Aristotle understood democracy as the rule of the cities, where everyone lives indiscriminately, and commerce is the dominant way to function. And the problem with these terms, though, as I said, is people try to import whatever meanings and how they feel at the moment. If you're talking about these things, you have to define them in context. State, nation, people, ethnicity. Even professionals in the field are not careful with how these are used. They even say stupid things like they're going to differentiate nationalism and patriotism. And all they do is simply invent definitions for both on the fly. But the way Dugin's using the term nation and nation-state as one and the same thing is purely civic. Civic is based on citizenship, and it's strictly a legal relationship. One of the reasons I oppose fascism in Mussolini's sense, and always have, is that that's precisely how he understood the nation. The nation and state are one and the same. He says this in his Doctrine of Fascism almost right away, and he repeats it over and over again. There is no ethnic unity there. The state rules all. Now, Hegel had this notion that the state is identical with the what we would call a people, essentially the constitution of a society, the people at their best, the people at their fundamental basis. That is not how Mussolini and even moderns in general use the term. In the old Soviet Union, the concept of nationality was used very different, because it was connected with these ethnic republics. And in the Soviet era, being a member of a nationality and ethnic group were one and the same. And that caused a tremendous amount of confusion. But that's an exception. The theory here is that you can't have a nation, in any sense of the term, without a people, and the people comes from the ethnos. The modern state first appears, of course, in Europe. Again, we're not talking, this is a modern state, we're talking about nation states here. We're not talking about anything else. And the Western commercial influence helped create this notion of nation state. So if you say the word state, you mean modern by definition. And this is what's developed over the last 400 years or so. At the beginning of the 20th century, the nation state coexisted with the traditional state. And the other term for that, in a very broad sense, is empire. They're referring to, for example, Austria-Hungary, the Ottoman Empire, Russia, or even Abyssinia. So the key distinction is modern versus traditional state. The word state by itself doesn't tell you very much. And there are things, there's really 10 ingredients that separate the traditional from the modern state. The first is extremely important, and it's how the differentiation among groups is understood. The traditional state has a caste and functional differentiation. The word class referred to function, had nothing to do with income. Of course, in the modern state, it's based entirely on money. The material possessions and the attitude towards ownership. The second is what we call the third state, the bourgeoisie. The modern state is the bourgeois regime. The third, predominance of practical reason, that is to say, basic material logic over ideals and any struggle towards an end other than that. So practical reason in the sense of really in our society, you know, practicality simply means achieving cash and using the most basic, almost animalistic means to achieve it. The concept of an ideal or an idealism, an idealist, is something almost considered a mockery. The fourth is the transition from a community, a people with a capital P, into a, what you call, a rational, artificially organized phenomenon. The state is a product of the mythical social contract. The emergence of the main fundamental unit of the individual, the ego turned into a citizen. And this is the fundamental carrier of politics and social rationality, which, to be very nice about it, is an absolute mockery. The fifth, we've already mentioned, and that's at least the formal removal of the complex of estates to the uniform idea of citizenship. And number five, is in contrast with the rest. Because if commerce is the main goal, if your worth is understood as your income and wealth, then the concept of citizenship falls apart. It's simply a formal designation having nothing to do with day-to-day content. Money can buy you anything. It dissolves everything into itself. It's the quicksilver of alchemy. The sixth is, and this doesn't come up very much, but the idea of a strictly delineated border recognized by others. The seventh is a fully rationalized economic system and a division of labor, where you have one commercial code, economic legislation, that unifies this entire state entity. Number eight is that because it's materialist, it is completely secular. And its goal is to solely remove religious idealism from the public sphere. Ninth is a formalized penal code, clearly fixing the structures of legal and illegal, and being almost identical with right and wrong. And today, as we know, everything is subject to legal regimentation, which is the very definition of totalitarianism. And finally, a single standardized language, the study of which is completely mandatory for everyone. And this is how the state communicates with citizens. Those are the 10 basic distinctions between the modern rationalized state and the traditional state, or, again, in a very broad sense, the empire. The traditional state, as many of you know, is based on the aristocracy or the guardian class of Plato and the clergy, which also includes intellectuals, but of a religious foundation. Ultimately, the policy of the modern state is determined by calculation, by self-interest. On the other hand, the traditional state has a sense of destiny or religious historical goal. And the modern state, really, when we refer to it, the so-called civic nation, it's artificial. Dugin says that it derives from the ethnos, but only in a formal sense. It's an artificial entity because it's really an extended version of the commercial partnership, which is the same thing, as John Locke will say, is a social contract. Modern state, the main political actor, again, on paper, is the citizen. But in tradition, it's the estate. Upper and lower class deal with wealth only incidentally in the traditional society. But citizenship in the modern state completely levels out ethnic and functional cultures. But of course, the ego is never liberated. It lives in its painful isolation. But the border issue is something that comes up rarely. You don't have fixed boundaries in, let's say, the medieval understanding of the state. Borders in the traditional or the medieval state aren't really strict lines you could see in a map, but they're zones. They're marcher regions, as they used to be called, often contested. And these zones are mobile and changing. But the most important thing is economics. It is meant to be a single, unified, integrated economic and legal entity. But in traditional societies, since material benefits aren't the primary reason for existing, you can have far more diversity and regional differentiation. And sometimes even, you know, small closed zones. And economic legislation as such usually is pretty undeveloped. And it varies from region to region. Law isn't seen as a talisman that it is now. Because man has free will, circumstances are so different. The personal element is far more important than simply the linguistic element. Words could be made to say whatever the reader wants them to say. Words are a terrible way to express something like law. And that's why tradition is so important. It's not merely rationalized words on paper, but an attitude. In traditional state, law regulates only the most fundamental issues of the political and religious order. And different functional classes are given broad powers. And they function at their own discretion. Politics, in the modern and traditional sense, have almost nothing in common. But in the modern state, of course, law extends to every area of the socio-political structure, covering the widest possible areas. One of the weaknesses of the postmodern diversity idea is that the more diverse the population, the more abstract law has to become. And it's no accident that in places like in Scandinavia, You have the Muslim invaders setting up their own legal entities, autonomous from the others. No-go zones, which had fallen out of the news for a while. But the abstraction of Western law is something anathema to them. And this may well be something that some of our people are going to be forced to do over the next decade or so. Now, when I talk about a single language in the modern state, I'm not referring to it in a broad sense. I'm referring to it in a very specific sense of grammar and syntax and meaning. The meaning is largely on paper, like everything else, because from day to day, public ignorance, people want words to be whatever they feel, whatever's in their interest. So when we talk about modern states, we're talking about nation states, and these by definition are modern. Even ethnicity within a traditional state is autonomous. An empire, by its very structure, is a set of ethnic groups having a certain civilizational connection, usually religious, and respecting a royal crown that has highly limited powers. Again, the political didn't mean the same then as now. Monarchs worried mostly about war and taxation. Social issues were taken care of by the church and local assemblies. And it's extremely difficult for moderns to put themselves into that situation. But one of Dugin's main points, and really all traditionalists and nationalists understand this, is that the modern state is a social contract for the carrying out of commerce. It is simply a bourgeois entity. It is an economic entity, as globalization is an economic entity. And I've been arguing this for many years, but the nation and the state, the way I've been using the term, that he uses the term, are opposites. The nation state, is irrational. Ethnicity and nation, in the sense I use the term, so I use nation and ethnic as one and the same, unlike Dugin, but we mean the exact same thing. But ethnicity is an organic, it's a primordial phenomenon, the simplest form of society. The state is the opposite. It's modern, it's rationalistic, it's economic. It's based on dollars and cents and written laws. Tradition is not relevant as a legal category. But a people is historical, as I mentioned, deriving directly from the ethnic group. It's the ethnic group that begins to have social differentiation. It's still an organic phenomenon because the ethnic structure is preserved, not just among the elite and middle classes, but also the masses as a whole, the commoner, so to speak. But it's not just ethnic, it's also political. And Dugin makes a distinction between the ethnic unity and the political unity. A people refers to the joining of ethnic and political. An ethnic group, by definition, as in its simplest form, is apolitical. It's simply a brute given of social life. The traditional state manifests the idea of a people. And in addition to that, religion and basic civilizational traits. You know, you first read, Thomas Aquinas on natural law. When I was first in grad school and I came across this at late college, I was struck by the fact that it had nothing to do with policy. The law was very broad. Natural law has to do with an attitude towards action rather than actions themselves. It's the fundamental ground from which right and wrong could be understood. That's not the case in modernity, because everything in modernity is rationalized and tightly controlled. In the scientific revolution, everything but moral ideals were made to a great degree of exactitude and mathematical precision. It is no accident that the one thing that was left out of the scientific and logical exactitude was moral ideals. Because what we know as the ruling class now, the early bourgeoisie, was creating weapons that it didn't want to be told what to do with them. There was only one issue, and that was class self-interest, or the self-interest of the ego, reducing everything to money and finance. So obviously things like love and poetry not only don't exist, but people can't define them and have no idea what they are. Dugin understands this phenomenon as increasing differentiation. The further you get away from the ethnic unity, the more complex society becomes. Modernity is a revolutionary idea where the notion of a people collapses in a fundamental shift. A people essentially pass from history and move to an area of rational organization. The concept of, as I mentioned, of heroism and love is nowhere to be found. That's not quantitative. That can't be reduced to numbers, votes, or dollars and cents, opinion polls. So the notion of the nation state is political, but even the political there is based on economics. It's the politicization of economics is probably the best way to put it. The definition of politics in the modern state is economic. But if economics is everything, then the political is everything. And very few people understand the implications of that. The political in traditional states is far more limited. First of all, it concerns only a certain level of the aristocracy. Common citizens are politicized only indirectly because both the church and ethnic tradition is what governs day-to-day life. The state has nothing to do with any of that. The state, in fact, has to respect it. But the modern nation state, everything is politicized. Because the nation, in the modern sense, is this political and economic community that distributes power on paper to all of its members, but in reality, everything comes down to money. So the economic dimension is the hallmark. The Constitution is this founding contract, which essentially comes down to being a joint venture, which ensures the economic interests of each. You still have class rule, but there is only one phenomenon, and that is money. And I mean that technically, it is a phenomenon. So on paper, the wealthy in the nation state have the same political rights as everyone else, but it's meaningless. Freedom of speech for Warren Buffett is not the same thing as freedom of speech for you and me. Therefore, that's simply words on paper, meaningless in day-to-day functioning. Because the private sector rules in these societies, constitutional provisions have nothing to do with how they function. You've heard it 1,000 times. Facebook and Twitter can totally control information, can throw anyone off they want, because it's a private company. All of a sudden, these leftists become libertarians all of a sudden. So what exists in the political realm is negated in the economic realm. You can't talk about the equality of formal rights and formal rights and privileges on the one hand and talk about capitalism on the other, because these things only function to the extent that you have access to the levers of power, and the levers of power have everything to do with money. So formal political equality and actual economic inequality is the basis of of the modern nation state. So, you know, they'll tell you to get out and vote. They'll talk about participation in the political process that only exists to the extent that the economic paradigm of capitalist, not market, but capitalist domination is preserved. This has nothing to do with markets whatsoever. You cannot advocate the overthrow of liberalism in a liberal society. I mentioned the NASDAQ demand of diversity on corporate boardrooms. And how, of course, this is exactly what the communist movement in America is demanding. Communism has nothing to do, never has had anything to do, with the working class. It actually despises the working class, and especially the peasantry. It's now dealing entirely with gender and race. Now, I mentioned that the notion of the demos is in reference to the cities. Now, obviously, cities existed in traditional societies as well as modern ones, but they had a completely different function. The cities in traditional societies were never extended villages. Villages are integrated into cities as they grow, but they function on a very different logical foundation. They're autonomous in their military centers, located at strategic points. The city phenomenon is an expression of war, or the real purpose of the aristocracy in traditional society. And war can not just necessarily physical war, but all forms of war. So cities should be regarded as deriving from a people. Cities have a special status in this case. It's the military union headed by the warrior king. The killing of the king rituals I've been talking about for many years is the destruction of this and redistributing that power to symbolically his sons or the owners of the joint stock of the nation state. And the warrior aristocracy, of course, have a service class attached to them, as you see in Plato as well. On the other hand, the bourgeois city in modernity is a completely different phenomenon. It's a unique legal world. And the demos doesn't refer to an ethnic group whatsoever, because its members are torn out of the ethnic environment by going to the cities in the first place. That has nothing to do with the aristocracy either. And what it comes down to is the locus of what Hegel calls civil society. Civil society is the economic aspect of the nation state. The nation state is a pseudo-ethnic, or as Dugin says, a simulacrum of the ethnos. The civil society has no ethnic dimension whatsoever. The notion of civil society is extremely important. It develops at the same time as the modern European nation state. And it's what we call, you know, a typical third estate citizen, so-called bourgeois nationalism. The citizen, almost by its very definition, is a city dweller. It's not ethnic, because ethnic has a tendency to be rural. And it's not a functional class in a traditional sense. Citizen, even its etymology, as well as its day-to-day functional meaning, is the same as to be bourgeois. Civil society is a society dominated by the bourgeoisie, the so-called third estate. So the civil society, the economic idea, and the nation state are common. They have common roots, and they belong to the same historical movement. They are almost the very structure of modern life. So the nation state is that legal instrument that creates the legal preconditions for civil society. These are perverted aspects of social life. So the confusion is in the usage of the term nation, civic versus ethnic. They're not just separated, but they are opposed. the nation state is completely artificial. Now, the word nation by itself is not, but nation state most certainly is. It's the so-called community of citizens bound together by a mythical social contract. And to function in that state, you have to agree to it. But the bourgeoisie is the universal destroyer. He is the normative figure in modernity in every respect. And we refer to them as the third estate. Yeah, it's a French background. The first are the priests, you know, ideals in general, and the second, the warrior class, the aristocracy, and the bourgeoisie is third. Now, there's some problems with that simplicity. And Dugin makes the argument that at least in Indo-European or Aryan societies, the third estate is in fact nomadic groups of cattle herders, not merchants living in the city. So the bourgeoisie is not really the third estate, because your pastoralists are the third estate in traditional societies. Now, this is something, this is a cancer. This is something that's parasitic on a natural functioning society. He's not a warrior. He's not a peasant. The way Dugin describes it, he is the peasant that doesn't want to work, or that can't work, or that thinks that working on the farm is beneath him, or is being driven from the village for some other reason. And as a warrior, he's a coward. He can't face death. He doesn't have the physical acumen to do the job. So he is either a failed peasant or a failed warrior. In traditional societies, the bourgeoisie existed on the fringes of society to facilitate some basic exchanges. It was never a class function in and of itself, let alone the dominant class function. Even beyond that, the sole reason for society's existence. It's never had its own ethic. It's never had its own tradition. It's never had its own mythology. It is, in society, what cancer cells are to the body. It's unnatural, and it's a sickness. It's peasantry that have been removed from their natural state. The Greek word idiotis, the person with no collective identity, the atom. The notion of atomistic society is one based on individuals isolated from one another, as you see in Hobbes's Leviathan. Of course, it's no accident that the atom was the foundation of the new materialistic science of the Renaissance. The bourgeoisie is an underclass. They're an isolated, identityless group. They're non-normal. They're perverted. They are completely outside of normal social life. They have no organic relation with any collective entity, and their identity is completely artificial. They're a part of city life as a perversion. They were never part of some ethnic group and abandoned it. They came to the city. They never had any traditional background. They began to define the normative vision. They've dethroned the warriors. They've dethroned the priests. He loathes both the peasant and the worker, because everything they do is based on their labor. They function according to speculation. The other side of that, of course, is the proletarian, who has the exact same, literally idiotic relationship to society as the bourgeoisie do. Proletarians and bourgeois citizens are two sides of the exact same coin. They have the same relationship to natural society. These are unnatural, atomistic, isolated, amoral entities. And in the city, they're both able to completely pervert the natural functioning of social life. So in the Soviet Union, of course, they tried to make the village into the city. They tried to completely mechanize the work and the life of the peasantry. So in both capitalism and socialism, the village was the enemy because the ethnic tradition is to be found there. The entire purpose of modernity is the destruction of empire. This is the essence of modern politics. I say empire, I mean the traditional structure of society. It perverted everything it touched. It is a destroyer, a universal cancer on human society. Anyway, that's how I'll leave you today. I thank you for listening, and I will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.